This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. The number one fuck boy. The number one cuck boy, John Gabrus. Guys, I am not in the High and Mighty studios, so there is no nearly silent co-host Arthur Gabrus. There is a nearly silent co-host, Nick Rad, who you maybe know if you listen to any other HeadGum podcast, specifically Twinnovation. I'm on the East Coast, so I can get those East Coast peeps on my show. And specifically, I got two of my favorites, my two favorite gray-haired improvisers. That's a compliment to Kevin.
Yeah, thank you.
I've got Shannon O'Neill, a.k.a. Spo, and Kevin Hines, a.k.a. khines@rocketmail.com.
All right, wow.
That's the wrong email on purpose.
It's almost correct, though.
I know what it is, but I'm not going to shout it out because I know you still use
almost.
It for all your Maxim and FHM subscriptions. Yeah.
Just enough that anyone who knows me can figure it out immediately and start emailing me.
Well, if they know you, I would hope they would have it.
No way.
Not Kevin.
No way.
Not Kevin.
All pen and paper.
Guys, we're going to be talking about improv. I've got the artistic director. I got both the stage and the school in one room, and I have no idea what we're going to talk about. But we'll get to that. Before that, guys, as always, I'm being so professional. It's really funny. Before that, we...
That's professional?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I'm not positive what professional means. I'm wearing a button-down shirt for not much longer. I got a tank top on underneath, bitch.
You were talking to who when you said bitch?
The listeners. Okay. Not you.
Pants are still on.
The general bitch. Yeah. Ride or die. Ride or die. Guys, as always, if you rate me 5 stars on the... Rape me again. Excuse me. If you rate me 5 stars on the iTunes app and then roast me in the comments, I will read it on this podcast. Yes, that's right. Please. And I'm on episode like 120 at this point. But please review my podcast. Here we go. This is from Twan58. The title is The Heavy Truth About Joe Gabrus. The most intriguing part about Jim Gabrus's podcast is the inevitability that one day he will have a heart attack and die in the midst of recording. One day, the heavy breathing in between yelling over his guest to talk more about being a lifeguard will stop. I never miss an episode, just in case this is the one. Oh, man, I hope I always said I want to die either fucking or recording a podcast.
Yeah.
Those are the two peak.
Oh, I hope it's recording a podcast.
Yeah, for Tiffany's sake.
Yeah.
And not even me dying during sex, just me having to have sex with her, that poor thing.
Yeah. Just record all your sex just in case. You can release it as a podcast.
Oh, I mean, I have it all. I just never thought of a reason to have it.
There you go.
Yeah, guys, if anyone wants to buy videos of me and my wife fucking or mason jars full of semen, let me
know. Louis C.K. has it for $5 on his website.
Yeah. Go to pignewton.com. This review is from Sarah W. And the title is, Where is My Insulin? And the review is, What Diabetes Sounds Like. Ouch.
That's the review?
That's the review. I guess that's a roast. Hey, Sarah W. My wife is diabetic, and I don't appreciate that. What if I got really offended for the first time over being
this
called?
This is the one. Yeah, this is the one.
And I don't have diabetes. My A1C is in check. Just ask my doctor.
Cool. I'm quitting this podcast. You've hurt me too much.
Yeah, this is upsetting.
And Tiff has it. Just from eating well.
Right. Tiff got it. She got it as like an autoimmune disease, unfortunately. Like, so she's type 1, and it's not because of choosing. I'm making all the... We love to play the game. Look at the two of us. Which one you think has diabetes?
It's not.
The normal-sized human or the 300-pound sweaty monster standing...
The proof all religions are wrong.
Yeah. Religious is... Because that dictates diabetes, right?
I mean, it's just good things happening to bad people and bad things happening to good people.
Oh, yeah, that's
what I'm getting into.
That's completely reasonable. That's a reasonable argument. All right, here's the last review before we get into it. This is called Workers of the World by The Marinator. Oh. Greebs is a hedonistic white privileged degenerate.
Agree.
So far, so far, not a roast.
Seems like a compliment.
Yeah. One week, he's eating an exorbitant amount of nuggies high out of his mind. The next, he's getting hyped about a trip to Vegas. He complains about having to engage in politics. He must have more important things to attend to. We are spiraling out as a nation, and he's worried about missing his big break. Liberals, don't be like this.
Okay, that's, to be fair, that's from when I had Henry Zebrowski on, and I said, I really don't want us to have a nuclear attack because I feel like I'm just about to get my career going. And that is honestly the first thing that passed through my head. I'm like, if LA gets nuked, I'm so close to getting a good deal.
you'll have just gotten a part in some show.
Like, oh, and I'll be like something that is mediocre, but I'm so excited for it. I'm going to be in a TV Land series two times out of the whole season, but I'm dead.
That's recurring.
Signing up. You know him. Remember when we all had Conan O'Brien in our credits because we did one sketch in like 2004?
I never did, but I know what you're talking about.
I had it in my, and then I would like,
oh. Now it's like everyone has a TV credit.
Right, because it's so like, easy to get one.
I'm a terrible actor. I have TV credits.
Yes. I'm a terrible actor and I have a ton. And none of a channel you've heard of, though. That's my thing. And we got Spo, True TV Darling over here.
Oh, baby. Yeah. True TV Darling.
True TV Live, baby.
Yeah. Fun.
From the Chris Gethard Show, in case you're wondering what the fuck I'm talking about. Guys, as always, rate me 5 stars and roast me in the comments, and I'll say your name on air or your iTunes handle. I really don't give a fuck. Just someone do it so I have something to do every week. Enough of that, guys. Let's move on to a real serious conversation about improv.
No more laughing. Improv's not funny.
It's serious. It doesn't have to be.
Honestly,
I'm a huge fan of Harsh.
It's 50% not funny.
It's 80% not funny. Yeah.
That's true. I'm being nice.
And it's 20% not trying to be funny, and then 100% trying to be funny, 80% succeeding. Follow me here.
I can't.
5%. It's 75% white.
How much of your podcast is normally math based?
Most of it, to be honest. Most of it, I'm just hashing out the quadratic equation. All right, great. So x equals negative b plus or minus b squared minus 4ac. The reason I wanted to have you guys on to talk about improv is both you have risen to powerful ranks amongst the UCB New York, but also you guys were both on my first good improv team.
Yeah. First good improv team.
My second improv team. My first real improv team that lasted more than 6 months and wasn't a clusterfuck. Because I was on Havana Clam Bake briefly, and then I went to Mailer Demon with you guys.
Right.
And then the three of us were also on
Fwand.
Probably my best Harold team, so two in a row. That would have been what, like 4 years maybe between Mailer Demon and Fwand we performed together?
Just under, yeah.
Yeah. And
because Mailer Demon, I think we were for a year. A little over a year, and right. Fwand was,
and then Rogers went to 85, and we kind of split down there. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And also like Appel and Moses and maybe Appel and Moses.
Appel moved to LA. Moses went to Yale.
Yeah,
and Rogers was dying to get away from us.
Defected.
And then we
contributed to the list of who will take the spots of Moses and Appel.
Yeah,
Philip gave like was like
argued. For a lot of people, he was not. He already knew he was leaving.
And knew he was leaving and didn't tell us. Ben Rogers, you dirty little fucking
piss
rant.
That sounds just like Ben to have super strong opinions and then bail on me.
But Fwand became one of the best Harold teams, and if Ben was on it, it probably wouldn't have been.
Yeah, Ben, you would have fucking ruined it.
You would have ruined it.
Ben would have been the wrong piece.
I don't know if we should do that opening.
I don't think Ben would have actually liked being on Fwand, but I would have also said that Sean Hart wouldn't have liked being on Fwand.
I think Ben would have liked actually being on Fwand. When he first saw what we were doing, he was a little jealous because 85 was doing headier stuff, and I think he wanted to do sort of that follow the impulse stuff. Yeah. I don't know.
Guys, and Ben's, I love how
so
Ben's
he claimed.
A great... A great improviser.
Or so he claimed to make me
feel better. I love that juicy detail of the defector.
Well, the other good juicy detail of defection, which doesn't entail you two guys, was when the law firm was, we were like, we're making a Harold team and we're going to bust our ass as a Harold team until we get a weekend slot. Like, we are picking this team specifically to be a weekend team. And then within 1 week of becoming a Harold team, Gavin and Pally accepted Death by Ruru. And they were two of your founding members of the... Yeah. Law firm that they founded so we can perform and create a weekend team. I'm like, well, guys, that's not fair. We
so
started
fast.
This entire team for that reason. I remember we were all pretty miffed about that. Guys, we are already so neck deep in inside baseball.
Inside.
Your followers are dropping like flies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but more people are tuning in that wouldn't have listened normally.
Yeah, right.
It's like people were like, this will be the secret to getting on a beta team. Lloyd is what I meant to say. I'll help you
on a beta team.
Yeah, you guys.
You want to get on a beta team?
Three of us should get in to start a beta team.
There's like 100 beta teams. They don't produce anything in our theater, but they have to rehearse once a week.
Yeah, they're paying a fortune. They're paying through the... I want to talk about Mailer Demon for a second. That was my first good Harold team. The first time I felt like I was on a team where other people weren't scared. I think like a first Harold team's a hard environment for people because everyone's, it's more about not getting cut than having fun. And I was completely a cocky asshole even right off the bat. So I never felt like I was going to get cut. So then when I got to a team where made up of other people who were like, no, we're doing good. It was such a fucking relief. And it was a relief because we were all rookies on that first team. And then we had vets on this team. But also we, I was talking to Dom about this.
Dominic Dierkis.
Dominic Dierkis, who was also on,
not familiar with that person.
He was Mailer Demon and Fwand as well, right?
Yeah, he was both.
We would perform Tuesday nights at Harold Night.
Yeah.
Sunday night rehearsal. Friday night at every other same arts.
Every other Friday.
And then we did go on a cage match run.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
Like 2 months or like 18. We did something crazy. So that was
right near the end of when Mailer Demon stopped existing. So like we were performing as Fwand, Mailer Demon, Fwand, and Fwand. It was like, it was so crazy.
When we had,
we were doing improv four times a week with the same people,
including a 3 hour rehearsal, which then me, Appel, and Rogers would go to ASCAT, not do it, but steal tacos in between shows.
But that's why we were good.
I think that, and that's what I'm saying. That's what nobody does anymore. Is like now everyone's on five teams or whatever. But we fucking.
It's just
the
opportunities. There's just so many opportunities now. When we were on Harold teams, there wasn't like a bunch of like.
Yeah, I wasn't in a practice group before I got put on Harold team.
And also, like, you weren't. Yeah, I mean, you weren't doing podcasts. You weren't doing web series. Or like, there's all these other ways of expressing your creativity. Yep.
But
so
we were like the last.
You could still do it now.
Yeah. Right.
You could still do it. It's just you have to find those people that would want to do it.
Yeah. And
were we the last Harold team that did like a run outside the theater at a space? Because I can't think of
whoever we.
No, other
we
teams did it. Mother did it.
Someone took over for us.
I think it was Brian Foss's team, Tantrum.
Tantrum.
Because I think
did
whoever
also.
We
Tantrum
had.
Tantrum did it with us.
With us.
Yeah. And then I think we left and left it for Tantrum. Like
and
Tantrum ran it
alone,
for a little while. Right.
Yeah.
But no one else was doing that for a while.
And
and also now, even with just doubling the amount of stage time at UCB alone, your little side.
Just shows too. People have other shows.
Right. Your side team can pop up there too.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we were just as Mailer Demon and then as Fwand performing. So fucking.
Yeah.
And if the Mailer Demon newsletter was any testament, we were the anchor slot for Harold Night. So it was every Tuesday. And so that was.
There was a 6 month run where we had one Tuesday off.
and then we.
And I was pissed. That, I was like, come on, why aren't we up? I was like what did we do wrong?
I went from one a month and getting stressed about getting cut to every Tuesday and then going, what do you mean I don't get a fucking 50th slot in a row?
I mean, I left my stepmother's funeral to make it back for a show.
It was like
committed.
It was insane for us. Like that's all I cared about.
It was,
like
it was fun and
I would like be blowing off anything on a Tuesday night. And also we
and
were at
Giants
rehearsal.
Games.
Giants
and
games. That was the worst was Sunday night rehearsals.
Sundays. 3 to 6.
Oh, fuck, dude.
Right? 3 to 6,
we were like floating around because sometimes we did 6:30 to 9:30. And once people started teaching and someone took that 3 to 6 slot. Yeah, it was brutal. But what can you do? You want to get fucking good.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Mailer Demon shows, I don't remember any specifics except Porter Mason was coaching us, I think. And we came off stage. Maybe it wasn't Porter Mason, but we came off stage and he was like, whoever was the coach, I think it was Porter, was like, that was 17 minutes. And we were like, really?
Yeah.
And we did like 3 third beats. And it was like, we were getting so tight and so crazy.
Mailer Demon shows, we struggled to hit 20 minutes.
We did.
Because we were just blowing shit out from like the moment one. Eric Appel in every second scene.
Dom editing every, like, after three lines. He would just be, and it would be like, oh, we made 10 moves in those three lines.
And group games were just like insane. That's like we had like that ASCAT vibe even as a Harold team because everyone could just be straight funny on their own on that team where it was like there is that like component of like everyone plays their part, we're a good team, but we were also all just like could stand in a circle and just say weird funny shit and get by on it, and we often did that as a group game.
Oh yeah. I had a flashback walking here of, and I have a real bad long-term memory. I don't remember a lot of improv shows I do, but I remember it was you and I, and there was like, we were being attacked, and I was like, they're on the roof. And you're just like, the roof?
No, I know what it was.
Wolf.
I got it.
No, it was Wolf.
It was Wolf. I remember that.
Yes,
too.
I knew what you said.
It was Wolf.
And you're still saying it.
That's how I say it.
Wolf.
Yeah. You, Gabrus couldn't let it go. The audience did not care about it, but it was just 3 minutes of us going, wolf, wolf,
and
wolf.
Then that's when the reason you have roof in your head is because I'm like, don't tell me the wolves are on the roof now. And I start putting an L into roof to try to make a game move out of me just berating you. I had like 50 scenes that were just like, I found a detail wrong. Like that's from, I found that, like, I learned that from John Gemberling watching Ruru, watching Monkey Dick and Ruru so much. Like that was the team that when I came to the theater was performing on Harold Knight was Monkey Dick. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with, of course, like Curtis and Gemberling and Neil and Will and like all those dudes. I was like, fuck, dude, this is the best. And Dynamo is like a legit look at you. Like, I don't know what this person is doing, but she's cracking me up, even though she doesn't seem to be enjoying this at all. that was another crazy thing I learned at the theater was that not all comedians were like me. You know what I mean? And that's like a great self-centered view of the universe. Yeah. But I assumed when I
went
back.
Are any like you?
Yeah, a few. Okay, there's like a few of like who are would have been the funniest dude in their fraternity now has actually focused their energy on becoming a comedian.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple of those. You see those like every.
I mean, Finelli.
Yeah.
He's not like you, but he's like the funny frat dude.
Yeah, and he's like, but he's oddly not confident either. You know what I mean? Right. I'm like,
but Finelli has sort of a chill energy, and Gabrus has a nonstop frantic. I got to get this out or the roof's going to collapse.
I got to get mine.
We did that weird, like, what was that? Like vodka sponsorship show. Like, do you remember doing this? And you were sort of half hosting while we were doing these improv sets. Do you remember any of this?
Vodka?
Is this a competition?
It was a competition.
It was not. It wasn't vodka. It was a dark liquor. It was like a Jack Daniels or a Captain Morgan competition.
Something like that.
And I think Mother won it and they won like $5,000 or something. Was it that thing?
Yes.
I think we came in.
That. And it was bullshit that we lost, right?
I think you guys must have done it after I left Fond.
Okay. I don't remember when it happened. I just remember
Gabrus there was like a 20,000.
Like, flipped a switch and just went nuts. And it was so funny. But I don't know if you breathe until the set was over.
I can do that. I can really take. I really enjoy the stage time. I love a hosting ASCAT.
Oh, isn't it the best? Hosting ASCAT is.
It's more fun than doing ASCAT.
It can be.
I pretty much my one man show that I'm doing in LA now is pretty much. It's called Gabrus Bullies the Audience, and I just walk around, talk to the audience, and make fun of them. And it's like I'm ripping off Rickles. Yeah.
I mean, that's why I do my. Talk show Strangers Wanted, where I just talk to the audience and I bring them up on stage and interview them.
And you interview them, yeah.
I think people in the audience are so, I just think strangers are just so interesting.
And they're so willing to share how fucking stupid they are. It's great.
I think you and I have a good skill of just, of like shitting on people.
And them not hitting
not,
you.
Yeah, but not hate, but not being mean.
There's there's a certain level of person you need
or
to
you
be.
Or you can find that person. If you do like start talking to them, it's like, oh, clearly like the audience is turning on them. And it's like, well, I can turn on them now too.
Right.
Everyone's kind of like, oh, that guy's, or that lady is just like, oh, what is wrong with them?
I've been told a few times, who said it? I forget what podcast I was on. They were like, he says the worst things, but you like him for some reason.
Yeah. It's got to be harder in LA because those audiences are.
Dude, I bomb hard. I bring some real weird shit to ASCAT, and it never, you know, I'm like, my go-to like panic move is like, I've got a child under the floorboards that I've been fucking.
John Wayne Gacy move?
Yeah, I'm always like fucking the skull of a 10-year-old magician's assistant.
Find that charming?
Yeah, no, it does not work.
Good go-to move.
I remember back in when I was on F'd Up Family, when I first moved to LA, Anthony Ataminik came out to sit in with us, and he made a 9/11 reference and no one reacted. It was really like the crowd was like, and then he turned to the crowd and was like, I lived in New York when it happened. And it was like, oh my God. And it's like, you're making this so much worse.
Anthony hates when his moves get groans or don't accept it. He gets mad at them.
He's the funniest type of instigator in that he instigates and then is upset with you when they are instigated. He's like, yeah, well, John F. Kennedy was a gay lord. And people are like, huh? And he's like, oh, it's true if you read about it. You're like, oh my God, I'm sorry.
He always has some kind of
super hot take. He's great for a hot take.
Some like Mason's dissertation in his back pocket
that he's ready to
pull out to explain.
It's actually true. David Icke says that the lizard people are infiltrating. You're like, oh, here we go. And that's like an 11-minute. I remember doing a monologue scene
Tony.
One time where I do love you, Tony. As a matter of fact, you are my guest on the live High and Mighty.
Oh, I saw that.
We What made you get started in improv? That's a fun question, right?
Oh, the origin story of us.
Yeah. What got you started?
I went to Chicago on like a college field trip for the, oh my God, what was that nerdy thing I did? National Broadcasting Association was like this like nerdy group I was in.
So you've always been into the NBA.
Yes.
Very nice. High five. No, you have to high five me, Kevin. You were like, ah.
Well, you came at me backwards. I wasn't sure where that was going.
The wrist, baby.
Oh, there we go.
It's germ free.
So, and the annual gathering was like in Chicago. And so I'd always been an SNL fan. And I was like, oh, and I knew of Second
And you knew
City.
That like comedy, a lot and of comedy came from there.
A lot of SNL people came from Second City. So I wanted to check it out. Got like 12 people to say, yeah, let's go. And then only like four of us actually went. and I saw Paradigm Lost, which was Rachel Dratch and Tina Fey.
Holy
and
shit.
Adsit and Dorf and others. Fuck. That I'm missing. And it blew my mind. And that was just like the sketch. And then they did the improv. And I was like, what? Like that blew my mind. So when I moved to New York to work in TV, I just was like, I got to try an improv class. And I took one in college and it was just like, lame, like the teacher didn't know what the fuck he was doing. It was like,
right,
it was
hindsight like, being 2020, like you're like, some holy
short form.
Shit.
Yeah, it was like some short form thing. And like, but there was like so many rules attached to it already with short form. I was like, wait, it's improv. Like, I have to like follow this. Yeah, like,
I have to say alphabetical order of words or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And I was great at it, but I was just like, this is not fun. Like, I wanted to break away. So then, I just asked a friend that I was working with when I moved here. I was like, where should I take improv? And he was like, you could do Second City or you could do Upright Citizens Brigade. He's like, I think you would prefer Upright Citizens Brigade. So,
oh, that's awesome.
So I wrote a $25 check.
That's how much?
Yeah.
Mailed it in, and that secured you a spot on the wait list. And then you would get, I forget, then you would just get an
email. You would list like the times you could do. And
yes,
at some point you'd
times.
Get a phone call and it would be like, all right, you start June 1st, Tuesday at 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
Shit.
So it was like Sunday. I think I took like a Sunday, like 9 a.m. class.
A lot of them were
something.
Early morning weekend classes.
Was this 2001?
This was 2000.
2000.
Yeah.
Because I started the same exact time.
Yeah. So yeah, then you're just kind of like told like, okay, here's your class. It's like,
I got
great.
A call from John Ross Bowie, who I didn't know, just telling me like, all right.
Speechless
start,
is John Ross Bowie.
That's right. It's like, you know, you started this time and that's it.
Yeah. And you just took it and then you brought your remaining 275.
And what made you want to take a UCB
class? I had moved to New York and Will was already here taking classes. He had
Will
just,
Hines, your brother.
Will Hines, my older brother. And he was taking classes and he took me to shows. And at first I was like, well, I can't do this. I've never performed. And I would watch Ask Cat and be like, these guys are
and you were right.
good. And I was 100% right. And that was it. That was my
but
improv
that didn't
journey.
Stop ya.
My improv journey ended there.
Yeah, I'm not positive why I'm on this podcast.
I clean dishes at the UCB Theater, and thanks for being here.
We don't need a dishwasher, dude.
There's
I'm going to keep doing
no
it.
Yeah.
I need to be a part of it. I think when I started going to class shows, because Will was in class shows, I'd be like, oh, well, I could take classes,
right.
And that'd be a thing to do, because I don't know anyone in New York, and I like comedy, and I like this.
You were like a comedy fan. I feel like that's...
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea I was going to be a performer, but I knew I liked comedy so much, and I was like, oh, I want to do it.
Yeah, I liked comedy. I liked saying, oh, these are other people who like comedy. If nothing else, that'll be fun, and I'll take a few classes, and then I'll move on, and then I never, ever stopped.
And now
ever.
You have been working there for a decade.
Yeah.
In some capacity.
So 17 years ago, I took a class. At that time, going, I'll take like three classes.
And now look at you.
Now
living
can't.
In the fucking suburbs on that hot, hot improv
<That's right>.
Money.
Yeah.
Buying homes, raising sons.
Yeah, none of which I paid for.
Married well.
Yeah,
smart
that's
move.
Right. That's right.
I pretty much was doing improv in college and
Humorists.
At Marist College. And I was at a comedy festival at Skidmore and I saw a lot of other people doing, and I was like into it, but then I saw a lot of other people doing it and doing it well. And some people doing long form and a lot of sketch. And I was like, holy, and video. And I was like, oh my God, this is what to do. And then randomly I was home for like a winter break and going to a Knicks game with some friends from Long Island. And we got lost trying to find this vintage, not getting lost, going to upstairs from Penn Station. We took the Long Island Railroad Inn. We're like, I know there's a cool vintage store downtown. Turns out we're going to Cheap Jack's, which is like the most expensive ripoff store in town. So we went down there. We found it. We didn't buy anything. Then when we were walking back, we got lost. And I walked past and I saw the garage door down with the 3D glasses.
With the goggles.
The goggles. And I went, I saw it and I was like, I watched, because I was a comedy nerd and I watched all these comedies and I was like, oh shit, I love that show. That's so funny. I wonder, is this an ad for the show? I didn't know anything about the theater. So I dogpiled it when I got home, or Yahoo searched it.
Dogpile
was a search engine I used that was like Yahoo.
It's like your kayak of travel.
Right. Like the screen would be split into four things.
Yeah.
It's like the oldest conversation ever. So I looked up, and then I saw.
You pulled up the microfilm, you scanned around looking for any references.
I was turning the knobs like Clarice Starling, and I fucking see, I'm like, oh shit, it's a theater. Oh my God, they teach classes. And then like the improv class description used to be a joke and it said
like guerrilla training.
It said like guerrilla warfare, jungle combat, like all these things. And I was like, even this is just funny, I'll sign up. And I signed up, and my junior year, in between junior and senior year, I was home on Long Island lifeguarding. And then like Tuesday nights, I would have the early shift at the beach and jump right on the Long Island Railroad and show up and take my little level one class.
What year was this?
2000. This was the with Vanessa Bayer. Remember, you found that out for about us?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
2003, the year before I graduated, yeah.
So you were at Chelsea?
My classes were on 23rd. Remember when it was
what theater were we in? We were in Chelsea.
We were in Chelsea at that point. Yeah. I mean, Chelsea's the only theater I ever went to.
26th Street.
26th Street's the only one I've ever been to. As a matter of fact,
so you saw the painted in the window.
Yeah. No, when I saw it, it was the 22nd Street. Yeah.
Oh, but by the time you took classes.
By the time I took classes, it was on 23rd because I had to go to school for a year. I didn't even think to commute down.
Or quit school.
Yeah. Well, in hindsight, I should just fucking have done that. No, I think it's worked out right. But I would have. As a matter of fact.
You may not have. You may have like done something and pissed someone off just from being one year stupider.
Right. Well, I think I got through the UCB program right before like the stupid people started getting like weird. I always joke that I was in the last generation of, do you understand game?
Yep.
All right, cool. You're on a Harold team. Like after me, like I think when I auditioned, it was like 60 to 80 people. And then like the next year it was like 400 or something crazy. It was like my last year where it was like 10 of 60 got on. Right. The next year it was like 8 of 500. And I made it just in where it was like back when like any loose cannon who had like stage presence and can understand patterns.
Just gets harder and harder and harder. Like I do think like if I'd started like 6 months earlier, I would have gotten on one much faster. It took me forever to get on one. But then I was like, if I started a year later, maybe I'd never get on one.
Right. And you can always just, you could do that. Yeah. You can nickel and dime every single decision in your life that way down to like, oops. Yeah. One. Because I was always like, oh, if I would have went to NYU, I would have started 3 years earlier at UCB. Who knows where I would have been.
Such debt right now.
Yeah. I know. I'd be in even more debt and not married.
Because before Shannon and I started, there wasn't even auditions. It was just like they put people on. You didn't audition.
I didn't. I was just put on.
You and Gethard were like the last.
There might have been one other team before us.
Because Petrol was the first audition team.
Yeah, I didn't. When I got on my first time, I had to audition later because my team got broken up and I didn't get placed. So I had to audition. I just got an email. I actually didn't even think about. To me, I was just having a lot of fun. And it was like that thing. Like I had a job at CBS as a page. And then like, oh, this is where I get to be, you know, social and
that,
like make same new
I was
friends.
A PA at VH1.
And so I like was interning Friday nights and I like loved it. And I was just taking classes because it was fun. And I just was like, oh, this is so cool. And like, this comedy is so weird.
And was Friday night like, Swarm then? Or they were
Fridays was Swarm. And there's often like Naked Babies had like a long running show.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then
so great.
There was like The Jam. And The Jam would go to like 3 a.m. There was no bucket. We changed it when Fwand or Mailer, when we took over The Jam, hosting The Jam, whatever it was, Liquid Courage or Jammin' with Ralph.
Jammin' with Ralph. Yeah.
Like, I specifically was like, we have to organize this better, bringing it
so
back.
So it ends.
And because when it was at 22nd Street, that jam was, you just jump on stage. There'd be 30 people on stage. Yeah.
It was generally the drunkest, stupidest people and the shy people, some of whom, like Gethard rarely got on stage.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I don't want to jump up in this madness. And Gethard was great and everyone thought he was great, but he's like, I can't, this is terrifying to me.
Rewards the wrong behavior in big jams like that.
I remember being in a scene with Charlie Sanders And I mean, this was 2001. It was like very early. This is before I was on a team. So it was like, you know, and I would get like my spine would freeze. I'd be like so full of fear.
Oh, that's
of like
so crazy to imagine.
Well, Respecto hosted it.
Nervous.
Respecto hosted it.
Hubel and Owen.
Watching
and
like Hubel and like Billy would always Respecto be there. And it's being like, you're just like, oh my God, Jackie, like these guys, they're all so awesome. And I
think Respecto more than any other team, to take a quick aside, is one of those teams where you talk about a very funny team made up of eight insanely funny on their own individuals.
Yes.
Like they're like the Swarm was more of a team. You know what I mean? And but like in their dynamic, but I think Respecto was like the Suicide Squad, like eight lunatics that all worked really well together.
Yeah. And I remember there's like two memories I have. One was I like jumped on stage and I did a move and it hit well. And then I went and I sat in a seat and then a scene continued and I was like, oh, I could do a callback, but like my spine froze.
Oh my
God. I was
like,
oh, I have the perfect callback, but my like, and then I just like, and then I saw Hubel turn his head and look at me and he like pointed to get up and I was like, he knows too. So I went and did it and it like killed. And I was like, oh, and then like, that loosened me up. I was like, oh, Hubel like pointed at me being like, I know you know what to do.
Right. And it was sort of like,
it was like this like pat.
It also validated your instinct where like, should I do a callback here? Yes. And someone, Hubel, who we all thought was insanely charismatic and funny, if he looked at you and was like, are you doing that callback? You're like, I was gonna, oh my God, yes.
So that like loosened me up. I was like, oh, I can do this. It gave me like this boost of confidence. And then I remember, like, one of my most uncomfortable moments on stage was, like, not ever, but of that jam.
No, you would have plenty more of those.
No, but of, like, the jam of just how it was such a fucking free-for-all of being in a scene with Charlie Sanders and baby Charlie Sanders. And, again, so young.
With hair.
With hair, but just, like...
A little bit.
Like fuzz. and we're in a Barnes & Noble, and he just was like, I forget where he said, but it's like, let's go... We're going to go behind those stacks. I'm going to fuck you. And I remember just being like, what? Like, I don't know how to handle this. Because nothing in class came up of like, I'm gonna, but it was just like, people were just like the most insane.
And it was baptism by fire learning at the jam.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's nothing. And it's not me saying anything negative about Charlie Sanders. Right. The thing of being like, I don't know how to.
I remember
now that's you saying fuck you behind the stacks.
Now I'm the one saying I don't fuck you.
I am the
stacks.
One who fucks.
I remember watching those jams though and being so impressed by Respecto because they made most of the scenes pretty good and pretty. It was still watchable even though it was insane.
They were like great jams.
And I still think back to that and just being like, oh wow, every scene was good. Owen and Hubel and Billy and Chad, they made every scene look good. And I was like, that's it. That's how good I want to be. I want to be so good that you could throw garbage at me and it'll be like a pretty good scene.
Yeah, I remember on like some teams when or practice or classes where people would be like, oh yeah, my scene partner sucked in that. I'm like, no, I don't know. I mean, you were also my scene partner in a later scene and I thought you sucked, but I didn't care. Like, that's fine. Once you understand that like sometimes it's not going to be great, it's like
you've got to get so good that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's going to, you're going to be good.
It is. It's like, I haven't done a jam in a while. Maybe like in a year, but there's
pretty recent.
Yeah. Yeah. For me too, it's probably been about a year, which is not that long. Yeah, and I still felt, I always feel, even if I'm feeling bad about my improv, I do a jam. I'm like, oh yeah, I can do this so easily. These people are all terrified. Yeah. And it's just so. And
just like learning to help people.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like make your scene partner look good. Yeah. Like that's, and it's also, if you don't, I don't know if you played sports growing up. Did you play sports, Kevin?
A little
Hines?
Bit. Not well.
I think having played sports a lot has helped me so much in my improv.
Same here.
Because you figure out like, what is my role? Oh, tonight
I'm just the offensive guard.
Yeah, you know
I'm just
what?
Blocking.
I can't dribble very well, but I can fucking pass right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and I think not, also I, my the 3-point sports... shot's off. It's like, I don't need to take 3-pointers. I'm just gonna, you know what? I'm just gonna say a line to Connor Ratliff and watch him fucking run.
That's really cool. My thing was D&D.
Which is pretty much improvising in character.
Yeah, so like when I started doing improv and I started getting decent at it, I was like, oh, this is just like D&D. It's like, I just need to make, we have to do this mission. I got to find a way to make this thing happen.
Right, and then you realize what the next step in a campaign would be. It's like, all right, I got to get them to the orc stronghold. That means they got to go to the tavern. So you know how to build the scene.
I'm still a paladin, but we have to do this mission. Yeah. So I can't stand here and fucking argue with the assassin. Yeah. So I have to figure out why. And it's like, oh, it's easy though. It's like, that's all just to have, I want to have fun. So I'm going to do that.
And you're basically, I've never played D&D.
Yeah.
And I don't want to.
Please play with us.
Well, you basically are like, you're just, it's all about agreement, right?
Yeah, it's all
given something, you have to take whatever.
If you're good at it.
Whatever the dice roll, you have to say like, yes, my Quaalude is in my anus now. Is that part of D&D?
I think you may have played it before.
I've
done both sports and D&D, guys.
I think there's not as much dice rolling as people realize. It's more just like sitting around pretending. It's right. Weirdly like, we're just going to do make-believe, and every now and then you roll a die, and you're like, oh, I guess I missed. Anyway.
But it's also, there's like an element to like, my character would charge into battle, and everyone's right. Like, no, we're going to lose. And it's like, but I feel like Bruner Battlehammer or whatever would charge into battle. And then that sort of teaches you, I mean, Colbert talks about it, that the reason he's so good as improvising as that fake Colbert from his old show, from the Colbert Report, was that he was improvising as a character playing D&D and didn't even know it in hindsight. Like, you know what I mean? It took him to learning improv to being like, oh, this is the same thing as DMing. This is the same thing as playing the goblin.
And it's a game, so no matter what you do, you're just like, what's the most fun choice? It's like, is it more fun for this guy to make the mistake and run in? Or would that make it less fun because we'd all for sure die? It's like, oh, maybe I will hold back in this time and find a reason to.
I want to make the most fun thing happen.
Yeah, and you want it to be a cool movie and an action scene. So it's like, well, I'd rather dive in and see what everyone does.
To jump back to sports, I think the other thing that sports helps you with in improv is the
losing.
Well, it's those two things, losing and getting cut.
Now you're into my type of sports.
Sports is objective meritocracy. Like, if you, like, I would be like, I really want to be a starter on the football team, but that dude is better than me. Yeah. So I sit. I try to get better. And then when I get my chance, I play as hard as I can and I make sure I'm getting something out of it because I'm going to practice as much as that dude does and not play as much as he does. Mm-hmm. So I need to get in my head that's the, and it's only because he's better than me. And I know it gets a little, you get into some murky waters when it's improv because it's arguably subjective, but you are objectively pointing
out. Yeah, I was going to say, like, it feels like, because I was bad at basketball, I was the worst person on a great team, and I would be put in garbage minutes and I would miss all my shots. And I'd be like, oh, if I just got more time, I could hit more shots. But I was like, also like, if we want to win, though, you don't do that.
Right.
And I kind of wished I was on a worse team just so I could play.
You like to participate more.
But like, and then you watch improv, and I have students who are like, I'm the best in my class. I've had students say that to me, and I'm like, they're like, why don't I get into teacher selected classes? Why can't I get on teams? I'm like, well, you know, it's really hard. It's really competitive. You have to be like the best person in almost every class you're in. Like, yeah, it's sort of where I'm at. And I'm like, oh, no.
You're not.
And like my mind, I'm like, you're one of the worst.
Right.
But you think this.
Yeah. And it's crazy. We're all the stars of our own movie.
Yeah, but it's like, but they wouldn't think that, I think, if it was, maybe some people do this with sports, but it's like, you wouldn't think this if you were like playing basketball.
Yeah, no, and if unable you got blocked five times in a row, you'd be like, no I'm bad. But you can create your own narrative in an improv class of just like, well, that move, I was doing something cooler, but Shannon didn't get it. So now we're in this fucked up situation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If Shannon doesn't get it, that's different.
We're missing five foul shots.
Right, exactly. There is no, like, people like, watched.
Well, she was, you know, looking at me and I heard her fucking fart and then I missed. It.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't go into your post-game press conference and say I was in my head. Yeah. They go, hey, fuck you, pal.
Yeah.
Well, I was trying to do...
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give you those points.
I mean, there's no hope in improv is what I like to say.
Right.
Because if someone's like, well, I was hoping they would do this. It's like, you can't hope.
Yeah.
You just have to react.
I went through a phase pre-Mailer Demon, my second team, Filth.
Which is, by the way, one of the first UCB shows I've ever saw.
Yeah, did you see our good one?
No, I saw here's a great inside baseball story. I was not living in the city. I was still at school, but I wanted to go see it. I made it through level one and never had been to UCB to see a show.
They were not mandatory.
There was not mandatory. Sure, not mandatory. And then someone made the analogy one time. It was like, would you ever play football without watching one football game first? So I was like, whoa, I got to go to some of these shows.
You went to a football game first.
So I went to a football game. I was like, I get it. I was staying with my friend. I was going to visit my friends who had moved to the city who had graduated Marist. And I was like, guys, everyone was talking in class about this cage match team that randomly beat Respect. And it was the day Filth had a great show and beat Respect the week before. And I saw the next show and I was like, oh, these guys are fun. Well,
it was an okay show. Right. It was an okay show.
But it was one of those things. And I talked
just
it up
missed
to my
our
friends,
best show.
And I just missed your best show. And that was my first improv show I saw at UCB. And I was like, oh, but there was something where I'm like, oh, this is really funny. I see what they're going for. I get it. And then I was like, oh, fuck scenes. I really like the whole show, because I would later get good at like callbacks and connections or pulling something small and I found that I loved that until I saw it live, because you're doing like level one and you're just stepping out and doing scenes off the monologue. And then I saw that and I was like, oh, there's a whole show to play with. And I was like a movie fan and like into comedy movies. And I was like, oh, now I understand why callbacks are funny, or why it's like, oh, that's the guy from Act One. And I'm like, oh, I started like, and yeah, I could see the connections between that and comedy movies. And I'm like, oh, I'm like autistically memorizing comedy movies. You, I could use that to my
you advantage. Bring everything back in shows, even the stuff nobody wanted brought back. Oh, yeah. It was like, oh, we bring this movie back. And we're like, no, I'm glad that move didn't hit. We didn't have to do it again.
I'm like, no. I think I got to fix
I remember
one.
You doing bad move, bringing bad moves I did, and like giving me a look like, you're welcome. And I'm like, I don't want to do this. This died.
The cocky you're welcome look is a classic game person. Like, guys, I got this thing sealed up and delivered. Don't you worry about
it. But I also remember getting credit for moves that you would do. Like, you would set up callbacks and I would go with it, and it'd be like, everyone would be like, oh, that was a smart move. I'm like, yeah, Gaber started that. I forgot about that until he started it.
That was the great thing about our team.
Yeah.
I think
it was
like,
hard to tell where things started.
You never knew who started something.
Well, that was what was fun about Fwand, right?
That was fun about Fwand.
And there'd be even moments where you'd be like, oh, Shannon, that was such great. You're like, I wasn't thinking that. I'm like, oh, I thought you were doing this awesome move, so I followed up with it, and then you thought I made that move.
Yeah.
We don't know where it came
it's
from.
It's the most artistic, and I hate to use that word, but it is like the most, we were truly like, well, what can we do?
Yeah.
And I thought, so if you're still listening and I have no idea what we've been talking about, our second team after Mailer Demon, which was like a fun, like, shotgun blast team, we did Fwand, which was like, and I would say, we were like a sniper rifle or a new weapon of some sort, if to keep that analogy going, where we tried to
like a ripple effect, like
scatter bomb or something.
We really wanted to take each show to be completely its own thing. Was like, I think our mandate was like every show, whereas in improv that is true because it's suggestion and you build a show, but we were like, no, the suggestion as the show, I think, was what Peter Gwynn would say, or those guys would say, that we kind of, and we just saw TJ and Dave were popping off, and Foursquare was like popping off at the time. And we were kind of like, these guys are breaking conventions. And Foursquare specifically, which is Lutz, Bacadol, Peter Gross, and I can never remember the fourth guy's name. Because the three guys I'm friends with, I don't remember the fourth guy.
I took a workshop with the fourth guy. He was great.
Oh, he was great. I remember seeing them full strength at a DCM, and it was awesome. But
he's the one guy that subscribes to your podcast too, so it's going to be heartbreaking for him.
And I remember, and Foursquare would do like never a sweep edit. They would just be like, open a door, and then everyone would be opening doors, or the shitty one is like a bird would fly by and then we'd all be birds or whatever.
Yeah.
But we found that to edit without sweep edits, we were like, oh, we can find these cool conceits for shows. And I was, and it was right at the time where I was like, I'm very good at improv. And we all were. Like, Mailer Demon was, we were all very good at improv.
It felt easy at that time.
And it felt easy, and it felt like we were, like, literally, we were doing 17-minute shows that people were like, yeah, and then we're like, what can we do with Fwand? And we just went fucking completely in the other, like, artsy, like
38-minute shows.
Yes. Yeah.
They'd be long.
And those were some of my most, so many of them, like, blend together in my head.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, now we're talking, each of us have done over decades of weekly shows, but fucking Fwand, the one I remember was the group game where we were...
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Where the flashlight would come on us and we would freeze?
No, it wasn't even a flashlight. You may have been the first person to step up. Somebody stepped out first and just stood in place. And that was it. And then someone else came in and stood in place until all of us were in the scene, just frozen. And that was the whole scene for like 2 minutes, was just us all standing still.
Yes. And then there was no game. Like, there was like no watchman or something.
Nothing happened. And then eventually you just went, they're gone, scatter. And we all ran. And that was the end of the scene. It was sort of a callback to an earlier mouse scene.
Oh, yes.
But the group game itself was just us standing still.
Oh, that was
and
fucking great.
And it was this weird thing where, like, the audience would be silent. And then everyone would start laughing. And then they get quiet because we weren't doing anything. Right. And then they would laugh again because we were still doing it.
And
we were 2 minutes.
On purpose, because we were trying. We had such a mission statement that we knew, all right, don't react to the laughs. We knew it was like, no. Yeah. Dig deeper.
And don't worry about what game is or what the scene is. Just support what's happening. It's like, nobody's moving? Then I'm not moving.
Right. Yeah. And it was so cool. Fun. And then the other big one I remember was where it was around the time of a big labor union strike.
Yeah, yeah. And the writer's strike.
Was it the writer's strike?
I think so.
And then we went on strike. Fwand went on strike, and we came out as our own Latino scabs. Yeah,
yep. That was post-me.
Yeah.
Chelsea Clark was also a member of Fwand after Shannon went on to the Stepfathers and still are doing the Stepfathers.
That was honestly such a hard decision.
I totally.
To go to the Stepfathers.
But it makes sense. That full hour is worth it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, I wasn't like...
Well, you just knew from Mail or Demon and from how the theater worked that we were all going to eventually leave. And, like, you know, Ellie was moving.
But I also knew how special Fwand was. It was just like, fuck, this team is so special. But it was like...
I loved Ruben. I loved Curfew. But I never felt like as, like, awesome as I did on Mail or Demon and Fwand, where it just felt like, oh, everyone loves this team.
Right, yeah.
Everyone knows us and loves us. It was so weird.
And I wonder also...
In the tiny little community.
Yeah. Part of it was that at those times in our lives, that was the most important thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yes. And I think that's always going to flavor your memories where it's like, yeah, Law Firm was never that. And it's like, because Law Firm, I was now in the business, quote unquote, and doing other things. And I was like, oh, improv is actually kind of like not, you got to be writing. You got to be doing this. You got to be doing that. And I was like, oh shit. But when we were doing Mail or Demon of Fwand, it was like, there was nothing more important to me than my improv team.
And that's a very... unusual
sad.
Thing.
Right, right.
No, not, yeah. To have eight people that are all right. in that same headspace.
Right.
Of like, and we
were, it was sort of lucky, like Mail or Demon, it wasn't like we brought ourselves together being like, hey, we're all super, it was just sort of like we got thrown together. Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of clicked,
and then we're like, oh, this has worked, and we all got, made us all get more into it, and then we added three more people. That could have ruined it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it made it better.
Because my first team, Optimist International, was great and like an amazing learning
experience.
Was Moses
experience. On that one? No, he was on Van Buren.
Yeah, no. Optimus International was me,
McBrayer,
Gethard. Eventually, McBrayer was like me, Gethard, Rhea Dates,
Husky?
McKeel, fucking Tom. I forget his last name, and then Husky, Seth Morris, Rob Cordry.
Jesus, Cordry of the Naked Babies.
Rob Cordry was on it for 2 weeks. On it, and then he got the Daily Show. And he literally came in and did a. I think he came in and did a group game, and then like he was driving by. Ran in, got on stage, did a group game with us. It was like us opening a bunch of drawers or something, and then he left. Like he did, I think he only did a group game, and that was
sort of
the most he did on the team.
It's sort of awesome that he was like, oh, I still want to do this.
Yeah, and then eventually was like, oh, I can't.
Yeah.
You know, I can't commit. And then we did get McBrayer. But that was, those guys had already, it's
imagine
like.
Losing Cordry imagine, and being like, we're losing Cordry, that sucks. Oh, here's Jack McBrayer. Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah. Okay, never mind. Another truly singular talent. Yeah.
But those guys, as far as like how old the theater had been, even though it had only been like a couple years old.
They'd been there from the get-go.
They'd been there, so they were like true veterans, and they were like thrown on a team with like me. And I was like, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, but I was that person. Like, I wanted to, there was like a span of like 6 months that like at one point that we had not rehearsed. And they didn't need it, but I was like, oh, I need it. So like I was kind of miserable because I wasn't at the same point as them. Like they were also
you
starting.
You needed to get closer to your 10,000 hours.
Yes. Yeah. They had already had their 10,000 hours and they were already like starting to like book stuff and stuff like that. So it's like, it was like and we were like a really good team. Like we were doing organic stuff back then. And it was very much a clinic on just improv and like my own maturity and how to handle things. Cause there was a couple times like I didn't handle stuff very well. And totally pissed like people off, but
yeah,
but
I mean that's the way to find
it.
Out.
But that's how you find out. It's like, oh yeah, I was.
You could have easily just said, "Oh fuck this theater," and then left. And usually that is, I feel like what happens is you do something wrong, you're embarrassed about it, so it's just easier to not ever deal with it. But like to grow from a mistake,
and it was.
No,
and I was like, oh wait,
I don't have time to do that.
I'm upset, but four people on the team are upset with me. Clearly,
yeah. What's the common denominator?
I am in the wrong here, and it was not. Yeah, it was just like messy, fucky shit. But that's what it is. It's like you have to grow from your mistakes and like your failures and figure shit out. But that's where then getting on, Mail or Demon, because that was then my next team because it was Joe Ross Tribe and then Optimist International was my second team.
And then you were on Mail or Demon, and there was that first iteration with Gavin and Shelley Stover.
Yes,
and others.
And others. And then
Thunder.
Dave Thunder, right. ITB. And then they left and me, you, and Rogers? No, Rogers was already
You
gone.
And I were the only ones added when we got added, but other people had been added before us.
Right.
I think like maybe Dom.
Gavin was not an original member.
Gavin was an original.
He was?
And
oh, maybe no. He
Gavin
was
the first to leave.
Dom was a new member.
Yeah. Dom was.
Gavin was the first to leave.
Dom went when Cagney, broke up.
Yeah.
He went to Mail or Demon.
Because Gavin went to the Shoves.
Right. He played with the Shoves. Yeah.
Anyway.
Really important.
Here's some random fond memories. I got another one just came into my head. Do you remember the Halloween show where we cut holes? This might have been Chelsea too.
It's Chelsea, yeah.
We cut
Oh yeah.
We made ghost costumes and one scene was an orgy and I grabbed Gil by the waist and was humping him like as hard as I could from behind. But we all had sheets on, so I'm pounding Gil, and then it's just like, Gabris, stop. And it was Ellie Kemper. And I was like, literally the most inappropriate. Like, I was fucking her, dry fucking her so hard. And I thought it was Gil. So I'm like, this is like funny. I'm bullying Gil. And she's saying it through laughter. Yes. So it's like one of the funniest things ever. She's like, Gabris, stop. And I'm like, oh my God. Afterwards, I'm so sorry. And then I was like, I understood like masquerade sex parties. It like made sense. I was like, oh,
you got some weird shit for a while. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. When I say understood masquerade sex parties, I mean really got into the scene.
Yeah, that was great. We were all in those ghost costumes, so we couldn't do any object work. There's no facial expression. Like, it was just a mess. It was the so dumbest weird.
Idea. It was a great show. I remember watching it.
It was a great idea.
Because you never called out that you were ghosts.
No.
Which was perfect. Yeah. Like, that's what you got to do.
It made no sense that we did that.
No, it did. It was so
good. We later on did a less successful Christmas one where we all held cups Mugs of cocoa, yeah. But never, and just always had one hand holding cocoa. It didn't work quite as well, but it was the same sort of thing of like sweaters. Very limiting. Right. Yeah.
I remember sweating my ass off.
I like when people try that stuff.
Yeah.
There was a Lloyd team that for it didn't work, and I know, and they are aware of it. I forget what team it was, like
was
2 years ago.
One?
The Blob.
Big time.
Big time. For Halloween, they just all were under one giant.
It was
like,
one sheet.
It was like eight holes, one sheet.
Oh,
right?
That's
right?
So fun.
Yeah. But it's at the East Village Theater.
So that's dangerous.
That stage is so hot already.
And it's eight people under seat
is the whole stage.
Yeah. And they were like, it was, yes, it was just like, but I loved it. Because it was
so cool
just,
they tried that.
They tried it and it did. Like, it just like, it didn't, it failed. But
Fwand used to be in the crowd a lot. That was a big thing, would be like just walking through. Like, I remember doing something where we were swimming and we were just like laying on the laps of people in the audience, like kicking our feet and moving our arms and shit.
Yeah, we were often on people. I also remember you drinking people's beers that had them in the audience.
That was just
the
like
audience was part of our problem. Show for sure.
That was just something I was going through.
Tuan was. I also loved Tuan because like it was the only team where it really was like I was in. Even if I wasn't in a scene, I was in every scene. Like you just felt like this. I'm not in my scene now. It's your scene now. It's this person.
I never
like,
felt at rest.
It's just like I'm constantly going. Yeah. And I feel like we're all in every scene. We're all in everything. Even if you're on the back line, it's like you're barely on the back line.
Yeah,
you just have you're in it. And if nothing has ever felt like that, even like the best other shows, a few Ask Cats I've done or Curfew, it's like there's moments where you're just sort of like, oh, maybe I'll do a walk on. But like, I'm not like I'm relaxing right now. I'm not actively going. But Fwand, you never could do that.
I remember a great Fwand show where this I forget what all the first beats were, but the second beats all occurred in the stadium of a baseball game.
Also, like, also like a Chelsea Clark show.
Was it?
Maybe that was one of our most recent ones.
I feel like I've done those. I feel like that's
we did a lot of one of our crutch moves was all the second beats take place in the same location. Was like a it was like a sort
I think that baseball stadium was near the end of our run. It was just before we like lost a few people and became Fwand for a month.
Oh yeah,
we were so Fwand. Yeah,
and Fwand, the naming of Fwand was a 7-hour journey, and Greg Tuculescu just threw out the name Fwand like to be an asshole.
Greg goes, "How about a Fwand?"
He said five gibberish words because we each were allowed to pitch like five ideas, and we're going to vote them down, and we voted it all the way down to the shampoo effect, and we still just chose Fwand like the shampoo effect.
I hated shampoo effect.
I loved it.
Shannon and I both loved Fwand.
Yeah,
and we were older and more stubborn.
And then we put the umlaut over the A. And it was all lowercase. It made no sense. We thought we were like a Swedish death metal band.
And our weekend show, when we did a few weekend shows, was called "What the Definition of Fwand" or "What is Fwand?"
What's the meaning of Fwand?
What's the meaning of Fwand? I love that name still. I love like a team being so good that's like this gibberish name feels like a cool name now.
Well, that's all it is. Whatever your name is, if your team is good, you love the name.
Oh, I had this conversation with Besser once on Improv for Humans, and I said, "Yeah, you have to make the team good. Monkey Dick, Respecto Montalban, those are garbage
Ruben
names.
Williams?
Ruben Williams?
That's a dumb name, but like all of a sudden you're like, oh, Ruben's great.
Yeah, and then
it's like, and you don't call it Ruben Williams all the time.
Mailer Demon was like one of the few, I thought, good names.
Yeah. Because
it was like of the time. I mean, now it would seem insane to be called that. But I said to Besser, I was like, yeah, like Upright Citizens Brigade. That's such a fucking... And he was like so offended. And I was like, wait, you don't think that name is stupid?
Imagine if that team was bad.
If that team was bad, it would seem so arrogant and stupid and overbearing.
And I'm like, without the history of UCB,
it's a great name. Based on what it has become.
Yeah. Right. Like the and Swarm, UCB is a great acronym. The Swarm is a good
the
name.
The Swarm is a great name, but if they were like a mediocre team, you'd be like, ugh.
Yeah.
I can't believe you call yourself the Swarm.
No, I think a good example of that is Dillinger and the Shoves, because those are two like punk band names.
Yeah.
And if you're not a good team, that looks soft. You know what I mean? Like Monkey Dick is a great example of like that. You should not have a cheesy name if you're an improv team.
But then that was a name because they couldn't choose a name. That was just what Billy had called them in rehearsals, because Mitch McGee used to say Monkey Dick a lot. So Billy would call them Monkey Dick because they didn't have a name, because they're just a practice group. They didn't do shows. They became a team. It was like, have you guys picked a name yet? And they're like, no, we're still deciding. It's like, you're Monkey Dick.
And that was like the team that did you guys have a team that when you started out, you were like watching and you were like, I want to eventually be on a team like that?
I mean, when I started Swarm and Respecta were the two best teams. So as Respecta actually wasn't a team. So it was just the Swarm. And then it was like Cowbot and Corndog All Right. We're good teams. Swarm was so much better than everyone else. So it was like, that's it.
Yeah.
And then Mother and Respecta. It was like, they were obvious. It was like, oh, the three best teams were the three teams I love.
Right. The three biggest teams. See, I like couldn't do weekends because I didn't live.
These weren't weekends. These were all Herald teams.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Swarm would do Herald and the weekend.
Yeah. When they first moved to Friday, they were still on Herald night, and they did cage match like once every 6 weeks if they weren't on a run anyway, because it just rotated through the Herald teams and nobody else did it.
Which is another way that those teams got good, because they were performing.
Just getting reps.
They're getting reps.
Swarm was great, and then Respecta formed themselves and they were instantly great, and then Mother got really good. And it was just like, wow, those three teams are awesome. And they were all on Herald night. I just watched them. I'd go to Herald night and be like, I'll sit through this bad team because Mother's after them. And even the bad team would be okay, but Mother'd be awesome. And then, oh, Respecta on the second half? Okay, I'll stick around. Who's in cage match? Swarm? All right, I'm going to stick around. And I'll be here tomorrow night to see Swarm again.
And that thing with getting reps, I think, is also important, that with us was we took advantage of, like, when we did those Friday shows, we still let ourselves be like, this is where we can, like, fuck around and have fun. But we didn't let that reinforce bad habits.
Right.
Where I think now, like, there's a lot of people, I think they think like, oh, we get a lot of reps, but if you're just performing for your friends,
right, if you're only doing bar shows
and listening to their reactions and letting that tell you if you're good or not,
yeah,
no bueno, my friend. Like, right. I would I think as a coach,
the rule I had was I could be shit faced for our Friday night shows, but I would be sober for Tuesday and Thursday.
I would have no idea that you were shit faced too. It's so impossible to tell. I never
very functional.
I am truly a functioning drunk.
So, because you're just like, I'm shit faced right now. I was like, what? You just did an amazing improv show, and I was like, fucking hated you.
You might be drunk right now. I wouldn't know for sure.
No, you'll never know.
I think back then, like, I mean, we didn't have a coach, but I would like, if I was coaching a team, like I would go to their indie shows.
Right.
Like indie teams. I would go to their shows and I'd give them notes. Like I would go to Bombardo shows all the time.
Yeah.
And like, that's how you got to get feedback from.
Right. Well, you also just got to know that someone's watching you. Do you know what's a great example of that? Like, anyone?
I go to the Creek in the Cave all the time and just sit in the back.
Just
I don't even know if they have improv.
Just email manager@creekinthecave.com. Lists pages and pages of improv notes.
Triple Crown. I started that fire.
Whoa.
I was kidding. I love how inside.
I wanted to see how you would react. I mean, there was some fire at Triple Crown up above, apparently, while there was a show going down in the basement, and like they didn't tell the people in the basement that there was a fire.
Holy shit. That's
some crazy
fucking
there's
wild.
Something like that. I don't know. Alleged.
What a way to die, doing a shitty improv show.
12 like people in the audience.
I remember seeing John Reynolds, because before
old
us.
Old school John Reynolds.
Old school John
Reynolds. Not Search Party, John
Not Search
Reynolds.
Party.
Ruben Williams.
Ruben Williams. When they were Robin Williams, would perform Friday nights at the, and with Ugly Stick?
I don't remember who
they
were.
Yeah, I think so. And
they
then,
did a stuff with Rogue, or was it just Rogue?
Oh, Rogue. It was Rogue. You're right. And then Rogue and Ugly Stick.
Okay.
It was like, I would go see Robin Williams and Rogue, and John Reynolds would be like drinking a tall boy, a Bud Heavy on stage. He would be visibly drunk, and he's a giant compared to the rest of his team. And he, like, I remember him one time holding Katie Dippold's cheeks like a baby, squeezing them to get her to open her mouth, and then pouring beer down her throat. And I was just watching that, like, holy shit. And everyone was enjoying it. And Dippold included was like, I mean, of course, I'm sure she didn't love it, but she thought it was like funny in that moment. And I was like, holy shit, this is like what team is like. And then Rogue would come out first, and you'd be like, these guys weren't as funny as Robin Williams was, but they were fucking a team too, where it was like, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to have this. And then I got it with MD and Flaunt.
We got it.
Let's wrap it up. Do we have any? I mean, it's kind of rude to ask the heads of UCB New York any going improv advice in case someone, like college kid is like, I'm thinking about doing improv, and then sees that I have this improv podcast episode. And
Well, it has to be fun, you know, like improv. You need to do it because you get joy out of it.
Right.
You're not going to. Don't go at it thinking you're going to get on a house team at whatever theater you're at. Go in it for the education of it, because anything you learn in the improv class, you can. It's also up to you to let yourself have that education. If you're cocky and you're defensive with notes, like, go away.
If you just want to take classes, someone tells you how funny you are.
No.
You're going to be disappointed. You don't get that validation ever, really.
You got to take it to learn and get anything. It's like you want to learn piano, you have to. You know, you want to be able to, you want to play piano, not to be like, oh, you play great.
It's one of the comedy is only like one of the few businesses that people show up and say, no, I got it. Like, you wouldn't just like go into surgery and be like, everyone tells me I'm a great doctor. You're like, wait a minute.
And you have to accept failure and embrace failure. That's like the most important part.
I mean, if you want to be in this business period, you have to be comfortable with rejection.
Oh, constantly.
I'm rejected 3 times a week. I mean, I'm immune to criticism. And
it's like, oh, getting an audition is success.
Why were you crying when we got in here?
Nothing happens from it is rejection.
Right, yeah.
Getting a callback, that's the next step in success, but then not booking it? That's rejection.
It, like 95% of the time, ends in rejection.
And then you finally book that thing and you film your scene and then they cut a bunch of your lines. That's rejection.
Yeah, and you tell your mom to watch and you're not in it. And you're Mom, I swear to God, I am an actor, technically. Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I got rejection. That, but why am I not getting a bigger part? Or right. why am I not getting this? Or am I? There's always
a
next thing.
You're asking why. Someone else can't answer that for you.
No,
there's
you
no answer
it out for yourself.
To success. And just, I mean, create your own shit. Everyone's probably sick of hearing that, but... There's not enough space wherever you want to be necessarily.
Right.
If you get there, you get there.
Make your own space.
Make your own space.
Yeah. Yeah. And
if you believe in yourself, believe in yourself.
Improv is super fun. We all did it. We all do it and we all love it. But that's it. Like everything else anyone gets is because of other things they attach outside of improv.
Right. Improv is still, you know, improv is fun because guys like Paul Scheer, who may be the busiest person alive, still does a weekly improv show.
Yeah.
Jason Mantzoukas still does improv. And anyone who's like Besser and Walsh, Horatio, these guys are showing up to do improv week after week.
Because it is fun.
It's really fun.
And whenever people are frustrated and being like, I'm not moving forward, or I'm not, and my answer is always like, well, is it still fun? If it's not still fun, stop doing it. Just stop and do something else. If it's still fun, then keep doing it and find ways to have more fun and try to get better at it. But
And if you only have fun with progress or like more and more success, that's going to be a real letdown in life because you do not continually succeed.
And don't blame others because you didn't get what you wanted.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's standard life advice.
Yeah.
And at some point, it will be someone else's fault that you don't get something, but that's fucking life and that sucks.
And don't blame Bernie Sanders. Just like,
blame Hillary. She ran a bad campaign. Lock her up. But, and like always, I'll end this with a lock her up.
Lock her.
No, but it is like that just came out and it's like, some of that is true, some of it isn't, but I hear that and I'm just sort of like, yeah, and it sucks that this has to be true, but it's like, the Steve Martin quote, it's like, be so good that no one can say no. And anything you want to do. And I think Hillary was great. But
there's no point. The last thing the Democrats right now need is a book pointing blame at
It's like, here's why. This happened. It's like, okay, but now you lost. I don't know. It doesn't matter where
forward,
all came
gang.
From.
We need this country.
When I watch baseball games and it's like, oh, if they'd gotten that one call, I'm like, ugh, it shouldn't have come down to that one call. You should have dominated the other team.
That was when I played rugby. That was the big thing. They would be like, it's bullshit. They won that scrum. That was bullshit. I'm like, hey, if we were up 21-0, that scrum wouldn't have mattered. You know what I mean? Like that's all you need to worry about.
The ref missed that foul. It's like, score more points earlier.
Yeah, like like in MMA and boxing, they say like, oh, the judges gave me the wrong points. It's like, don't leave it to the judges, not the motherfucker. Fuck her out.
If you have a bad show, take the lesson and apply it to the next show.
Yeah.
Don't dwell on that other
and
show.
Also, it's one of many to come.
And also, if you're not having bad shows, you're not trying hard enough.
Exactly. No, don't coast.
I have students.
If you don't think you've had a bad show, you are not. You have had a number of bad
definitely
shows.
You see students and performers who are just like, they're playing it safe all the time. It's like, you're pretty good. You're not getting better because you're not making mistakes.
Right.
Yeah, you gotta make mistakes. I still make mistakes, and that's
I constantly make mistakes.
I choose to make mistakes so often.
Mistakes are the best part. I play with Jim Santangeli, who
He's the most excited when he makes a mistake.
Well, because he literally can never remember someone's and name it's so or much specific fun. Job. Like, he can never remember any detail.
But I try to just channel that energy when I watch Jim say something and we're like, wait, what did you say? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's what he meant to say. And it's
he's one of the few
so
people
funny.
I know. Like, we always joke as improvisers, you start a sentence not sure, not knowing how it ends. Jim starts words, not sure, not positive how the word is supposed to end. He doesn't even know the fucking third syllable. Guys, this is the plugs portion. We'll start with Spo, because you have plugs and
wow all right.
I took Kevin's joke from him. I feel like that was what he's gonna hear.
Yeah.
We got the Gethard show.
We have, yes, the Chris Gethard show is on True TV. It's live Thursdays at 11 o'clock, so please check that out. We should be going through the first week of December.
Oh, nice.
Oh no, that was a skull.
That's my little girl skull.
So please check that out. You can also
Your Twitter?
So people can @spotastic.
@spotastic. So people
can Twitter and tweet. My Instagram. Please don't fucking. I'm gonna say I've only been on basic cable. Now True TV is great. We had a lot of exposure, but I'm starting to get weird messages, and I don't like it.
I get weird messages, and I think women get like exponentially amount of.
I think people think they're being nice
because you're weird on the show too.
Yeah, but I don't like just like someone putting a comment that's like you're fucking hot. I find that. I don't like that.
No.
And also, what?
I like it. I like when people message me, Spo is fucking hot. Yeah.
Please, @Gabris. Spo is fucking hot.
So you see me on all your creepy messages. Yeah. The DMs are open, baby.
I don't know. It just feels like a weird thing.
And I get, because of the personality I've built online, I get people sending me comments that I think they think are bits.
But it can be hurtful?
Yeah. Well, one time I was like, hey, man, don't ever say my wife's name.
Right.
And he was like, I'm really sorry. I was like, no, it's fine. But like, think about that. Like, yeah. Would you go up to Tom Cruise, like whoever.
It's like, who's your wife?
Who's your wife, you gaylord? Handsome. Scientology, would you ever shut down this podcast? @ Kevin Hines.
At Kev Hines. Kev, yes. K-E-V Hines. And yeah, check out my lawn. It's recently mowed, so it's looking real good right now.
Actually, check it out as soon as possible because you don't have time to mow it again.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a couple weeks. So check it out right after I've mowed it. It looks pretty good.
Check
in
out my Instagram, kevhineslawns.net.
Later this year, I'll be reading Oathbringer. It's the latest Brandon Sanderson novel. It's 1,000 pages. So that's a cool thing to keep up on me about.
Oh, that's really exciting because I just read the Kingkiller Chronicles. Highly recommended.
I've read the first one.
They're both great. There's two of three. Great. And I have a book on me that is my favorite fantasy novel right
now. Read Stormlight Archives.
Insane. And that's Sanderson?
Brandon Sanderson. Yeah. And they're insane.
Not a part of this
conversation. Oh, this will be a whole nother episode. Next time I'm in New York, we can do a fantasy.
Oh, man. I love his books.
All right.
So boring.
So you want to talk sports for a little bit? You guys want to watch a VHS highlight reel of dunks?
Michael Jordan, Come Fly With Me, one of the best. You could honestly, that's such a good. Come Fly With
that
Me.
That was the most
on-brand
Spo moment right there. If only it finished with like, now grab my sandy tits.
Oh, my peanut butter.
Sandwich
bags filled with peanut butter. Yeah. Anytime Gabris has permission in improv scenes to touch my tits.
And I have. Yes, once.
No, you've done it more than once.
You're like 1,000 times. You do it mostly in rehearsal. There was one where
you've done it like a handful of times, probably
when it made sense
through the years. Yeah, yes, yeah. It's never just random.
Right,
it's just like an eye contact thing of like you.
I can't believe we made it through this podcast without talking about you being pantsed in rehearsal.
You just talked about it recently, didn't you?
Did you?
I think so. Let's end it real quick.
Was that male or demon?
Male or demon?
That was male or
demon. Moses did it.
I was doing a weird stretch. It was Callback Island at the end of rehearsal.
We had been doing.
We were in
pantsing.
Room one. We're in room two.
We're in room two at the UCB, and I was doing. Street. I was calling back to the stretch and share as like a stupid bit.
Yeah.
And Moses went to pants me and pulled down my underwear as well.
We all saw
my little fucking tiny dick next to my giant body.
Not the last time I would see you.
No. One of many times. I did a web video with you where you made me look at it for a while. You and Justin. Jesus.
Just the intro.
I don't think it ever played anywhere.
Just laughed.
And we had to call rehearsal.
So fun. For like half an hour.
Todd literally said rehearsal is over. Yeah. And I'm pointing up in the air because Charlie Todd's my next guest, so I think he's probably outside.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were, oh man, it was...
It was fucking
it was
wild.
So funny. Yeah. Moses apologized so many times.
And my hands were over my head, so like I had like the slowest reaction time, the longest distance to get him in front of my
dick.
And
also the one person who didn't care, his dick was out probably.
Right, right.
You're like, did I do this or did someone else do it?
Well, it was funny because it was one of those things where I like laughed, looked at like, because I think the worst part was is that you and Ellie, the two females of the group, were across the circle looking at me, and I just like,
yeah, you were here, I was here, and you were there.
I saw you see me and was like, oh, and I was like, no.
It wasn't, we were all looking at you because you were telling a monologue,
right,
or something.
I was calling attention to myself like I do at the whenever I speak.
It
out
was
loud.
The best.
Yeah, we were in like a wide circle. Yeah. It was probably one of the
it was good.
Hardest.
That's what improv's all about.
Left.
Looking at John Gabris's dick.
Yeah, oh, that's my last piece of advice is if you
I think I told that story on Pete Holmes. You made it weird as like, yes, a thing. Like, when's the hardest you've laughed?
Oh, yeah.
I think I told that.
That was one of the hardest times I've ever laughed.
Because it was 15 minutes of just like...
Yeah.
Like being like, why Moses? And then like we saw it. It was like all these things to
just
try.
Tears running down my face. It was
and
so
everyone
funny.
Lost it. The other time I think we laughed the hardest was... when somebody, I was playing a someone riding a wolf on someone's back, and the person underneath me wet themselves. They were laughing so hard, and then we saw the streak on the ground.
Oh, because that same person, maybe this was twice. That same person.
It was a separate time because they did it once on. That was at rehearsal.
A few times on stage.
And then on stage, that person, we were doing an exercise, and I was they were on their back, and I was moving their legs back and forth, and they were laughing. And then I was like, okay.
You dragged them.
And then I dragged them, and then we all saw the peace tree.
And we knew it happened, so it was like, oh.
Yeah, we had already had that. We knew what they were. All right.
So I brought that up with them recently, and it was very funny.
I'm at John Gabris on Twitter, and the guy who peed his pants on stage. And buy a shirt at gabris.com/shirts. And last piece of improv advice, if you do want to take classes, I would say go to New York or LA and take a class at UCB.
You get funny in New York.
Yeah. Oh,
take that, LA.
New York is harder to live in. So if you succeed, it's New York forces you.
I will tell you what, LA is not easy to live in anymore. It's lonely and depressing. Yeah.
Oh no, there's like a difference also.
Right.
But
right.
I mean,
yeah.
Like just the financial and the weather.
It
and
also feels like there's more chance to just suck in New York and get better. Right. Where LA, it's sort of like, if you're sucking, you're next to Paul Tompkins. And it's like, oh, he's great. I'm done. It's over.
Well, and New York is like, amongst UCB, it's like UCB first, Hollywood entertainment second. In LA, it's sort of flipped where it's like, people are not talking about cool shows they saw, but they're talking about places they've submitted their
samples
to.
All we talk about is our improv shows and sketch shows. In LA, it's like, great show. Now, what'd you book?
More importantly, is that a U5 or what? Guys, thank you so much for coming all the way to Williamsburg to do this.
Thanks for having me.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.